community works, we're going to take a look at three types of people that Jesus wants to bless. Those who show mercy, those with a pure heart, and the peacemakers. See, God delights, I mean, He absolutely delights in blessing His people. And the plan for us today, in the next half an hour or so, is to dive into what Jesus had to say to discover how to lay hold of those blessings. Hi, I'm Bernie Diamond. Thanks so much for joining me again on Christianity Works. I'm really looking forward to sharing God's Word with you today. And in a few minutes, I'll be telling you how you can request your free copy of our latest life application booklet, God's Abundant Blessing. So stay tuned. All right, let's head into God's Word to discover the powerful things that He has to say to us today. I was chatting with a good friend of mine, Paul, who's a magistrate in the Children's Court the other day over coffee. I've always been intrigued at what it must be like to have to make those sorts of judgments that a judge or a magistrate makes day after day on the bench. As he shared the sorts of cases that come before him, what struck me was the incredible human tragedy in so many of them. So often when you and I perhaps watch or listen to the evening news and we hear about this murder or that rapist or the latest tit-for-tat gang shooting, we judge those people so quickly. We do. And of course, when people are found guilty of crimes like that, you have to look at the crime and say, that's terrible. And yes, the people should pay the price of justice. But as Paul shares some of the tragic circumstances that some of the children who come before him have grown up in, you have to say, there but the grace of God go I. If I'd grown up with those abusive parents who taught me their trade of crime and violence, would I be at all different from that kid that Paul just put away for knifing someone? It's a dilemma, isn't it? It's a fine line. On the one hand, crimes do have to be punished. On the other, the circumstances into which people are born and in which they grow up and live are often 99.9% of the cause. That's why courts so often take those circumstances into account. So why is it difficult? Why does justice walk such a fine line? I guess when we're the judge, albeit through the evening news, we're more likely to come down on the side of a heavy penalty, punishment, retribution. Why should that murderer walk free after just 25 years in jail? But this is what I think about. What if it was me being sentenced by Paul? What if I'd committed some terrible crime in a fit of rage or stupidity or because of something that had happened to me in the past? What if it was me standing in that sentencing dock? What if it was you? Guilty for all the world to see, but with this terrible, unspeakable pain in our hearts over what we'd done. With a remorse beyond words. If only we could turn the clock back. If only we could undo it and take that one instant back. If only I hadn't done that. So there you are, standing in the dock, awaiting sentencing. You never ever thought the shoe would be on this other foot. Not in a million years did you imagine that you'd ever find yourself in this place. You're trembling, you're shaking like a leaf, you're pale, you're detached. The whole thing's kind of surreal. You're detached and the judge opens his mouth and begins to pass sentence. What's the one thing you want to hear come out of that judge's mouth? I'll tell you what you'd be looking to hear. I know what I'd be looking to hear. I'd want to hear compassion in his voice. I'd want to hear him speak words of mercy, wouldn't you? Okay, let's snap out of that terrible scenario and come back to the here and now. Don't you feel your quick-to-judge attitude towards those people on the evening news is maybe a bit rash, a bit harsh? It was all about which foot the shoe's on. Have a listen to how Jesus unpacks this terrible reality. We're reading from Matthew chapter 18, beginning at verse 21. Then Peter came and said to him, Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive them? As many as seven times? And Jesus said to him, no, not seven times, but I tell you 77 times. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he began reckoning, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought before him. And as he couldn't pay, his Lord ordered him to be sold together with his wife and his children and all his possessions and payment to be made. So the slave fell on his knees before the king, saying, have patience with me and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the lord of that slave released him and forgave him the debt. But that same slave, as he went out, came upon one of his fellow slaves who owed him just 100 denarii. And seizing him by the throat, he said, pay what you owe me. Then this fellow slave fell down and pleaded with him, have patience with me and I'll pay you. But he refused. Then he went and threw this man into prison until he could pay the debt. When his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their lord all that had taken place. Then his lord summoned him and said to him, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt. "So my heavenly Father will also do to every one of you if you don't forgive your brother or sister from your heart." This is a story about which foot the shoe's on. It's a story about judgment and mercy. And you and I are that first slave, the one who's forgiven but so often refuses to forgive, the one who's been shown mercy but refuses to show mercy in return. Do you feel your quick to anger, quick to judge, slow to forgive attitudes being put fairly and squarely in the spotlight here? Do you see them for what they are? I do, and frankly it makes us both squirm in our seats, right? Because Jesus is cutting right to the bone here. He's dealing with something that needs dealing with in our heart, in our attitudes, in our actions. Over the last couple of weeks on the program, we've been chatting about the strange blessings that Jesus talked about in his famous Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the totally spiritually bankrupt. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those hungering for justice. And today we're looking at the very next one in that list, Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. And when you listen to that story of Jesus, that blessing needs no more explanation either, does it? It's pretty obvious. God is a God of mercy, and he pours his mercy and his forgiveness out on us at great cost to himself, at the cost of the death of Jesus on that cross. And all he asks in return is that we keep pouring that same mercy, that same love, that same forgiveness out on others. But that person who hurt me deserves what's coming to them. Of course they do. That's the whole point. You can only show the mercy when they don't deserve it. And every time you and I show mercy, listen to this, it costs us something. It costs us being right, getting our own way, getting compensation or justice or retribution or whatever else we'd like to call it. Mercy can only be shown and received when it's not deserved. And mercy always, always costs us something when we show it and give it. They're two laws of the universe that God created because mercy is an attribute of God. Psalm 103, verse 8. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. As I was praying earlier, the thing that I prayed is that you and I, when confronted with hurt and injustice, would remember this picture that I painted of us trembling in the dock, awaiting sentence. That you and I would remember the heart of God through that parable of Jesus. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. I'm Bernie Diamond and you're listening to Christianity Works. I just want to take a moment during this short break to share something truly important with you. God is a God who wants to bless us abundantly. He just is. But laying hold of that blessing, well, that's not something that we always do all that well. That's why I'd love to send you a free copy of our latest life application booklet called God's Abundant Blessing. It's full of life-changing, practical Bible teaching to help you actually experience the amazing blessings of God in your life. To request your copy, stop by our mobile-friendly website, ChristianityWorks.com, and you'll see that free offer right there toward the top of the homepage. Click on it, pop in your name and email, and that e-booklet will be winging its way to your inbox in just seconds. It really is that easy. Again, the web address is ChristianityWorks.com. Now, God, as things turn out, is vitally interested in what's going on in our hearts. Let me be a little bit more in your face with this. God, as things turn out, is vitally interested in what's going on in your heart, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because we think and act out of what's happening in our hearts. Good behavior comes from a good heart. Bad behavior comes from a bad heart. And that's why Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart." The next blessing that Jesus talks about in his famous Sermon on the Mount is the blessing coming to those who are pure in heart. Now, purity is a funny concept in this day and age. On the one hand, as consumers, we want to know that what we're buying is pure. I mean, if you're buying a wedding ring, you want to know that it's made of pure gold. If you're buying bottled water, you want to know that it's pure. Purity means that what we're buying is free from contaminants. It means it's the real thing. We're getting what we paid for. So as a consumer, purity is something that we value incredibly highly. Would you agree? But the moment, the instant we apply the idea of purity to people, to ourselves, what you get is this, oh, come on, just hang on a minute. This isn't the 1950s religious state you old people grew up in. None of that old-fashioned moralizing. My private life is exactly that. It's private. It's none of your business. And don't give me this sexual purity thing. Get with the times. And that's the thing. When we apply that idea of purity to people, mostly what that brings to mind is sexual purity, the idea of no sex before marriage and staying faithful to your husband and wife when you are married. And in most people's thinking, that all went out with the ark. But for me, purity is much more than that. If we take that same definition of purity that we used for water and for gold, free from contaminants, getting what we paid for, when it comes to people, that can't be a bad thing. Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." That can't be a bad thing. But in this day and age, what does it really mean? Well, I guess as I tried to figure out what Jesus meant, I kind of tried to look at who we are, you and I, from the outside in. And what struck me was the connection between our tongue and our heart. Between the things we say and the stuff we do and working back from the tongue, I thought about foot and mouth disease. How what we say is, in fact, a reflection of the purity or otherwise of our heart. So here are my three steps to curing foot and mouth disease in reverse sequence from the outside in. And it kind of, I'm using this to illustrate the concept of purity in our hearts. So here they are. Step number three, starting from the outside, coming back in. Step number three is never write an email that you wouldn't post on Facebook. Talking behind people's back is just about one of the worst things we can do. It doesn't really diminish them. It diminishes us. Gossip is like poison, and the person ultimately whom it kills off is the gossiper, because people stop trusting us when we gossip. They figure if that's what we say about others behind their backs, what are we saying about them when they're not there? Paul writes to the Ephesians, "Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful and useful for building up, as there is need, so that your words may give grace to the ones who hear." Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. So simply don't say bad things about people. Check the tongue. But that's not always that easy to do, because our tongue so often runs out of control. It's exactly what the Bible says, James chapter 3, verses 1 to 8. So what's the answer? Well, brings me to step number two. Never think something that you wouldn't say to the person's face. It's amazing how what we think is what we end up doing. Just about everything you and I say and do begins with a thought. Thoughts become actions. And so when you really annoy me and I start wanting to think some bad things about you, destructive thoughts, angry thoughts, vengeful thoughts that'll turn into actions or inactions, that'll ruin our relationship and diminish us both. When that happens, I try and remember Paul's advice as he sat in a dungeon on death row, and I try and put it into action sooner rather than later. Paul writes this to the Philippians, chapter 4, verse 8. "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, then think about those things." So when I'm thinking bad stuff, I decide to start thinking about good stuff, because while I'm thinking good stuff, you know what? There's no room for thinking bad stuff. But there's another level, a deeper level at play here. So my step number one for avoiding foot and mouth disease is this: never allow something dark to fester in your heart. See, even deeper than our thoughts are our emotions. It turns out that our thoughts not only go outwards into actions, things we say and do, but also downwards in our hearts. Into that place where we live, that place where we feel things so deeply, into that place where hurts accumulate and turn into hatred and vengeance or sacrifice and love. The good person out of the treasure of a good heart produces good. The evil person out of evil treasure produces evil. For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. That's what Jesus said, Luke chapter 6, verse 45. Now, whilst I seem to be able to choose what I think about, as determined and strong-willed as I am, I can't seem to control what I feel in my heart. Have you noticed that too? So I go to the only person who can make a difference in that place. And I say to him, "God, Create in me a clean heart. Put a new and right spirit within me. The sacrifice acceptable to you, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Psalm 51, verses 10 and 17. It's the only thing I've ever found that works. Jesus. And so if I bring those three levels together, what we say and do on the outside, what we think in our heads, and what we feel in our hearts, if the contaminants can be removed from that pipeline, then what you have is a person who's pure through and through, the real deal. What you see is what you get. No evil lurking. An open, forgiving, loving, decent human being from the outside right through to the inside. But even more importantly, from the inside to the outside, because it all starts in our hearts. The psalmist put it this way in Psalm 24, verses 3 to 5. He said, "Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? And who shall stand in his holy place? Those who have clean hands and pure hearts, who don't lift up their souls to what is false and don't swear deceitfully. They will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from the God of their salvation." That's the blessing of purity. I'm Bernie Diamond and you're listening to Christianity Works. As we take this short break, let me ask you this. Would you like to draw closer to God into a rich, intimate, dynamic relationship with Jesus? Well, that's what our free daily e-devotional, Fresh, is all about. Words of inspiration, hope, and encouragement delivered right to the inbox on your smartphone, tablet, or computer each and every day. You can read it, you can listen to the audio, or you can watch the daily 3-minute video. It's completely up to you. A short daily devotional to take you closer to God by getting you deeper into His Word. God's Word, fresh for you each day. It's completely free. For instant access, stop by our mobile-friendly website right now, ChristianityWorks.com. You'll see the Fresh e-devotional sign up right there at the top of the homepage. That web address again is ChristianityWorks.com. Now, conflict is a fact of life. It just is. And when we're up against it, we tend to have one of two reactions. Either we want to give them as much or more than they're giving us, or we want to run and hide. But there's a third option. We can choose to be the peacemaker. Now, being a peacemaker is not easy. It's a tough gig. But what a blessing. So let me ask you, when it comes to the conflict in your life, how do you react? Do you fight? Do you run? Or do you make peace? A guy a few months back who runs a ministry called Peacewise. His name is Bruce Burgess. What's Peacewise all about, I asked him. Well, he said, conflict is all around us. Conflict is a fact of life. And Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." So, he reasons, if that's the case, then being someone who makes peace is like being an image bearer of God. People look at us and they see something different. They see God. Problem is, most of us don't know how to respond to conflict biblically. Makes a lot of sense to me what he said. So I want to unpack just a few things that Bruce shared with me as we try to understand what Jesus means by this blessing that he bestows on the peacemakers. Generally, our response to conflict isn't all that well thought out. It's just a gut reaction. At first, there's the escape group of responses. Denial. Let's pretend it's not there. Flight. Let's run away. And sadly, in some extreme cases, suicide, when people lose all hope of resolving a conflict. Well, they can't see a way out. And now at the opposite end of the spectrum from the escape responses are the attack responses. Assault, a full frontal attack to roll over the top of someone and get them to yield. Sometimes that goes into litigation. Lawsuits ruin relationships. They diminish our Christian witness. And often they fail to achieve complete justice. And again, at the extreme end, people may be so desperate to win that they'll try and kill their opponent. Now, none of those, be they an escape response or an attack response, are particularly effective. Problem is, when we're in conflict, it's not a good time to start trying to figure out how to handle it. But if we can learn God's wisdom and make it part of who we are, and then head into conflict armed with godly wisdom, can you imagine what a powerful and effective Christian witness that is? That's what the ministry of Peacewise is all about. Pretty cool, huh? You can just Google them on the web and you'll find them there. Anyway, what really struck me were the godly principles that Bruce had put into his life and which formed the basis of what he teaches. He said to me, look, where are people reconciled to God by the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ? So we believe that we're called to respond to conflict in a way that's remarkably different from the way the world deals with conflict. So out of all that, the ministry of Peacewise grows these four biblical principles. They all start with the letter G, the four G's. And you know what? Even just spending a half an hour with Bruce, I've managed to remember these four G's. And when I find myself in a conflict situation, they're what I fall back on. It's been a huge help. So here are the four G's, the four principles he shared with me. The first is glorify God. Instead of focusing on our own desires, instead of dwelling on what others may or may not do, let's rejoice in the Lord and bring Him praise by depending on His forgiveness, His wisdom, His power, His love, as we just faithfully, as best we can, set out to obey Him and maintain a loving, merciful, forgiving attitude in everything, no matter how terrible the conflict, no matter how much people come against us. King David was no stranger to conflict. He spent many years on the run with King Saul trying to kill him, many battles and wars. Even his son tried to kill him. David wrote these words in Psalm 137. He said, "Don't fret because of the wicked. Do not be envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good, so you will live in the land and enjoy security. Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord and trust in Him, and He will act. He will make your vindication shine like the light and the justice of your cause like the noonday." That's the very first G, glorify God above all other things. That really sets us on firm ground as we deal with conflict. The second one, the second G, the second principle is this: get the log out of your own eye. I guess most of us know this one, but let's just hear it again from Jesus in case we're a bit rusty. Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse 3. "Why is it that you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but you don't notice the log in your own? Well, how can you say to your neighbor, 'Look, let me take the speck out of your eye,' well, there's a log in your own? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly enough to take the speck out of your neighbour's eye." Pretty confronting. How easy is it to blame everyone else and resist correction instead of trusting in God's mercy and taking responsibility for our own contribution to the conflict, confessing our sin to those whom we've wronged, asking God to help us change any attitude or any habit that we have contributing to the conflict, so that we can see the whole thing clearly, so we can respond in a godly way. So the first G is upward, glorify God. The second G is inward, get the log out of your own eye. And only when we've done those two can we move to the third one, which is gently restore. Instead of pretending that the conflict doesn't exist or talking about people behind their backs, we overlook minor offences, or we talk personally and graciously to those whose offences seem too serious to overlook, trying to restore them rather than condemn them. That's the key, trying to restore them rather than condemn them. When a conflict can't be resolved in private, then just as Jesus taught, we ask others to help us settle the matter. Psalm 19 verse 11 puts it this way: "Those with good sense are slow to anger, and it is their glory to overlook an offence." And the last of the four G's is go and be reconciled. Instead of accepting premature compromise or allowing relationships to wither, we actively pursue genuine peace and reconciliation, forgiving others for God's sake as Christ has forgiven us, and seeking just and mutually beneficial solutions to our differences. Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 23. So when you're offering a gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Hear the four again: glorify God, get the log out of your own eye, gently restore, and go and be reconciled. You know, this isn't the easiest path. This path to conflict resolution takes courage, it takes humility, it takes sacrifice, and it will often cause us pain to be a peacemaker. Look at what it cost God to make peace with you and me: the life of Jesus on the cross. But there's blessing in this place. And not only that, it's one of the most powerful witnesses of our faith that we can possibly have. Because people notice the difference. People notice how we behave in conflict. People notice how we behave under pressure. Jesus said this. He said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God." Why will they be called children of God? Because people notice the difference. May you be blessed as you become a peacemaker. Well, that's pretty much all we have time for today. But before I go, there's something very important that I need to share with you. Our passion here at Christianity Works is to see your life powerfully transformed as you draw ever closer in a rich, dynamic, powerful relationship with Jesus. Because God is a God who wants to bless you mightily. With all my heart, I want to see you walking in that blessing. So let me encourage you to check out the treasure trove of practical, relevant, and life-changing Bible teaching available at our mobile-friendly website, ChristianityWorks.com. It's full of free resources to help you draw closer to God. So dive into the Media Lounge to watch our weekly Christianity Works TV broadcast or the daily fresh devotional videos. Everything's been conveniently categorized so that you can filter the content to quickly lay hold of just the teaching that you need for what you're traveling through today. Remember, everything on the site is free, including that booklet I mentioned earlier, God's Abundant Blessing, and the fresh daily e-devotional. With all my heart, I know that Jesus wants to have a powerful impact in your life to bring you His joy, His peace, and His power. So go on, head across to our mobile-friendly website, ChristianityWorks.com. I'm Bernie Diamond. Catch you again, same time next week, with another message of God's love, God's grace, and God's power for each one of us in Jesus Christ.